You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time to talk about things like high upside and low ceilings.
I would not take a quarterback there. Probably get one of those receivers. Now you got weapons around the quarterback, or you get the left tackle to bookend.
This is a Draft Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Crunch Fitness, celebrating 35 years of fitness with a party on Tuesday, April 30th from 4 to 7 p.m. at Aloha, Beaverton, Division Center, and Vancouver Plaza.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080. The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, 1080 AM. And we're not maybe YouTube? I don't know.
No.
Okay.
No.
Still not.
We're going old school today. Old school today.
AM radio.
I even shaved a mustache in just for the audience today, and they're not going to be able to see this gloriness.
Like a racist scout with the Chargers right
hey,
now.
Hey, why don't you pull over, huh? Why don't you come over here? What do you got in your backpack there, huh, bud?
Sam Monson's going to hop on at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about some of the local products coming up at 7:15. It is NFL draft week, so we'll dive into some NFL draft. We'll get back into some NBA playoff stuff later. And some odds and ends. Doc Parker an hour from now at 8 a.m. Dirt, would you believe me if I told you the Cleveland Browns hired somebody smart enough to basically evaluate how to properly draft, and then after hiring that person, refuse to listen to them and instead tell that person that they were going to take Johnny Manziel because, quote, nobody competes harder than Manziel except Michael Jordan? Would you believe me if I told you that was the Cleveland Browns?
I'm trying to rack my brain of the worst run organizations in the NFL, track. Yeah, that would make sense. The Browns have been irrelevant my entire life.
Steve Gura was hired by Cleveland in 2013. He's a former Marine turned analytics guru. He loves Moneyball, so he dove into sports analytics. Cleveland hired him for this. And he got there and started assessing how to properly figure out how to draft. Like, why is there not a science to this? Let's figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And he was immediately met with, Johnny Manziel's amazing. He asked the coach, what makes you say that? The coach said, tape, watch it long enough, you'll see it too. I wonder if that exec still works in the NFL.
My guess would be no. I don't think anybody who was involved outside of the owner is still with the Cleveland Browns that was around for that draft.
Well, what's interesting is there's a really good read by Alec Lewis on The Athletic. You know what? I'll tweet it out. I don't care if it gets no retweets or likes. I'm telling you, go read this if you have an Athletic subscription. It's a really fascinating look because every year we argue and debate. Is this guy going to go seven? Are they going to trade back? Are they going to trade up? Which quarterback's better?
Yeah.
I feel like most of us are pretty reasonable and understand that, like, some years taking the offensive lineman, though not sexy, is the right pick.
Yeah, or trading back and getting more draft capital that you can use on different positions of need and plug multiple holes.
And believe it or not, there have been analytical teams created to figure out how to draft. And what's interesting about this is Alec Lewis finds analytic groups that basically do this. They give you the weight and the value and how and what the percentages say work out for this pick or that pick or trading up versus trading out. And yet it's met with acceptance and pushback. The NFL wants the data, but as Bill Polian says in this, human beings at large will ignore it and go on instinct.
Yes, they will.
So what the draft becomes is a lot of data and evidence saying, don't do this, and they tell themselves, no, I'm going to do this. This is different this time. And that's what the draft is riddled with.
You're going to see it again in 2 days.
In 2011, Kevin Mears applied for an analytics internship with the Dallas Cowboys. During his interview, the Cowboys brass side, it was Mears, who majored in economics and statistics at Harvard, was worth a shot. He had a 63-page academic paper they found fascinating, overconfidence versus market efficiency in the National Football League. And he basically said every team is dumb, that they get in their own way, that there are ways to value the draft and properly navigate the draft, but instead, people, like every year without fall, get in their own way and say, no, I can see this tape. This dude's different. We're reaching up, and we're going to draft him.
This is the time to go get him. I was thinking about this yesterday. I knew we were going to talk about it today. And I think there was a glaring example of it and a good reminder of how bad one organization has been for almost my entire life outside of like 2 to 3 years. And that was the Jets basically paying the Denver Broncos to take Zach Wilson off their hands yesterday. Zach Wilson was the number 2 overall pick in the draft behind Trevor Lawrence. The names after him, outside of the other bad quarterbacks from that draft, Kyle Pitts, Ja'Marr Chase, Jaylen Waddle, Penei Sewell, J.C. Horn, Patrick Surtain, Devonta Smith, Micah Parsons, Rashawn Slater. Do I need to continue?
I mean,
you
almost
get the point.
Every single one of those,
all those
names,
guys,
almost every single one is either a legit absolute stud
or a really good player. And they took him with the 2nd overall pick because he played 1 year of college football, which was, by the way, the COVID year, in which it was a watered-down schedule. That was really his only serious season of playing. And then he threw a ball in shorts on the run inside of a dome 80 yards. Yeah. And they used the 2nd overall pick on that kid, who was an undersized quarterback. Like, what? Everybody with the brain, I feel like, at that time was yelling, what are you doing? Now, we might have been debating Justin Fields should go there or Mac Jones, and those takes could be end up being horribly bad, too. Zach Wilson has been the worst quarterback in the NFL over the last 3 years. Every number literally backs it up, and they just had to pay another team 3 years into his NFL career, pay another team to take him off their hands.
So this Mears cat hired by the Cowboys, he wrote that teams massively overestimate their ability to delineate between stars and flops. Because of that, they heavily overvalue the right to choose in the draft. So here's some highlights that he uncovered. The treasured number one pick in the draft, he says, is actually the least valuable in the first round, according to the surplus value a team can create with each pick. So if you're at one, all the history of the league suggests the benefit of trading out and getting additional stuff versus taking the pick outweighs it significantly. He says across all rounds, the probability that a player starts more games than the next player chosen at his position is 53%. Think about that. The probability that a player starts more games than the next player chosen at the same spot is 53%. Teams generated a 174% return on trades by foregoing a pick in this year for picks in the following year. A 174% return on the trade.
And I would look at it. It's probably not going to happen. Maybe I'm surprised in 2 days. I think this is fitting for this year's draft because I would make the argument Washington is nowhere near winning. They have to plug a million different holes on that roster. Trading out is the right call. New England is a dumpster fire. They have no targets. Their offense is non-existent. They're starting over with a new head coach. More draft capital, the better. I would argue the same for Arizona. I would argue the same for the Chargers. How many of those teams, the Chargers, we know won't take a quarterback and they're likely to trade out? How many of the three ahead of them have the headiness to say, you know what, it's better to go get somebody else at, you know, anywhere between 11 and 16 and then use that 2nd round pick we're getting or use the future 1st round pick we're getting, and we're going to be able to plug that hole that we would have plugged at number 4 and then plug another one as well, and both those guys will be on rookie deals.
More than a decade ago, Alec Lewis writes, one NFL team commissioned a study into whether certain GMs were better than others at drafting. Though some posted better track records than others, specifically Baltimore's Ozzie Newsome, the answer was mostly no, that most of this is luck. You can be a great evaluator, you can understand the game, but who you take and why you take them may not shake out to equal success. And that how, like, basically, so there's a story in here with Ursay. Ursay goes into the war room with Dungy and Polian present. So this is the early Colts era, right? Goes in there with a friend. this friend thinks he knows sports, sees the Colts draft board, and goes, why did you mark these people off? It's like, Dungy says, they don't fit us. And he goes, what do you mean? They're good players.
Yeah, do they not fit us?
And him and Polian basically turned to Ursay's friend, so I can only imagine the annoyance in their voice, and said, there's other things to these guys than just their ability to play football. There's off-the-field stuff.
Yeah.
There's psychological aspects to this. And basically blew the guy's mind. The guy had never considered any of that. He was just like, oh, he's a good player. Take him. He's like, he had this off-the-field incident. He's got this going on in his personal life.
Yeah.
His coach has said he was this, this, and this. And so I found it a very fascinating read that you've got analytical, the nerds have wondered. The nerds have studied the draft, and they've given blueprints to teams, and teams every year just don't care. They're just going to ignore it. They're going to trust their instincts,
yeah.
And they're going to trust. They're going to value their ego the most and say, no, 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 I know football. I know this guy's going to hit.
I think it's a two-prong problem, one of them being you have owners who are overly aggressive, feel like they... I was reading excerpts from Bill Walsh's book the other day, and it kind of tied into the Belichick stuff from this past offseason.
Wait, are you reading a Bill Walsh book?
No, like somebody was tweeting out different pages about it.
I literally just got a Bill Walsh book.
Did you really?
Library. Yeah.
So it's basically connecting how bad and how dumb owners are.
Yes.
And how they... They're smart at business. They're smart at whatever industry they made their money in. And then they feel like they can translate that to the NFL. Instead of just hiring people, putting them in place, like these guys, this is their chosen profession. They have been brought up in this industry. They have been training for this their entire lives. This is their strength, but owners will get in the way. I think Carolina is a prime example of that last year. It's a team that wanted to make a mark with a new owner. We got to go get a franchise quarterback. The owner steps in. The head coach, you could tell the entire time, wanted nothing to do with Bryce Young as the number one pick in the draft. He wanted nothing to do with that. And they ended up having to fire him halfway through. He's throwing drinks at fans. It ended in epic failure. I think the other part of it is the GMs who are desperate to save their jobs and feel like landing the franchise quarterback and hitting on that roll of the dice is going to do it. And or, you know, kind of an offshoot of that is also just generating interest and selling tickets. And so that's where I look at the top three teams. We know Chicago's taking Caleb Williams. Do Washington and New England have the wherewithal to not panic and make a reactionary move? Do they have the wherewithal to be level-headed and say, maybe Jaden Daniels is going to be good. Do you see it? Are you willing to bet on him being an all-pro right now? I'm not there. Maybe Drake May, I'm higher on him than I am Jaden Daniels, but a lot of the numbers from college are not overwhelming, and maybe there's some value in seeing if Michael Penix slips in the middle of the first round. Maybe there's some value in seeing what quarterbacks are there in the second round. We trade that pick. We get two first-round picks for it. We go draft a dominant offensive lineman, and off we go. Let's build the roster that way. But unfortunately, too often, these bad owners, over-aggressive owners, trying to sell tickets and GMs trying to save their jobs, they get in the way of the people who know what the hell they're doing and are really smart.
I think from time to time, you just have to kind of evaluate how organizations are operating. And if they go a couple years where you go, what? Huh? And they're not good. That's why if we're ever critical of any team, whether you're a fan of them or not, if we're critical, it's because they've given us more evidence to be critical than yes. To say, oh, man, they're being run amazingly, right?
Right.
You mentioned the Panthers there, and we all know Dave Tepper's an absolute lunatic.
He's a horrible owner.
Did you see that? When you read the Belichick story, you know what part stuck out to me? Belichick being railroaded by Kraft, all that stuff, certainly got the most noise. There's a literal blurb in there that said that the Panthers did not consider him because Tepper loves to break down and basically question his coach's play calling decisions.
I would quit on the spot. I would quit on the spot. You know nothing about football.
Nothing about football. You've invested no real time in football. You just suddenly bought your way into this club.
Yeah, you're a very rich, smart man, but not when it comes to football.
This is part of the problem with the draft, which is what highlights in the article. Like it says, Jerry Jones, if you told Jerry Jones you can have $100 right now, or I'll give you $274 next year, Jerry Jones wouldn't bat an eye, goes, I'll take the $274.
Of course you would.
But if I tell you you can have a third rounder right now or a second rounder next year, Jerry Jones isn't patient enough to care about the difference between those two,
no.
Even though the value charts clearly scream more value next year.
We see it time and again in the NFL. Trading down is usually the right move, giving yourself more bites at the apple, especially in a sport and I don't know if there's numbers that'll break this down and what the percentages is per round, but how many times do we see guys go on to have Hall of Fame elite careers that are third round picks, fourth round picks, fifth round picks? It is all a roll of the dice. You have no clue. The best quarterback in the NFL all time was a seventh round pick. One of the up and coming young studs,
Brock Purdy, huh?
Mr. Irrelevant, right? Last pick in the draft. The 49ers were luckier in hell that he was there and that they picked him and that's worked out, because their drafting a Trey Lance was an epic disaster, an epic failure, considering what else they could have gotten in that draft. They were incredibly lucky that was there. It reminds me, we talked to Golliver for a YouTube-only thing last week, and we were talking about the ownership situation, how bad it is in Portland, and he agreed with our overall sentiment there. But he pointed to Paul Allen, and one of the things that he loved about Paul Allen is that he always wanted to be involved, but he never overstepped his bounds. He might have fired a GM a little too quickly occasionally, a little reactionary, but he always loved being around the draft process, seeing the guys, hearing what everybody was saying, but he would never insert himself and say, you have to draft this guy, you have to take that guy. He just wanted to be a part of the conversation because he loved the sport. Owners need to be that way.
Steve Gura, final thing on this, when he worked with Cleveland and he's doing this draft analysis, he said he discovered he wasn't even sure who ultimately was making decisions on actual picks. You would assume it's the general manager, and he basically said that's what they don't tell you is how the sausage is made. It's wild and unpredictable with every organization, and you never know who has the most say in that room. It is a fascinating read, and just important given draft days on Thursday. You see these teams, we rant and rave about, oh, they got that guy. All right, and then watch it play out, see who trades up, who trades back. Where's the value? It's out there. They know it, but largely their egos and their football expertise does not allow them to weight the data, I think, properly.
Even the most successful organizations are guilty of that. The Niners are as good as run as anybody right now. They've been as successful as anybody outside the Chiefs the last handful of years. They had a general manager draft a quarterback with the third overall pick that the head coach didn't want.
Does the letter work? Next on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague here on the radio. Good morning. Hello. I'm going to cancel the YouTube interview, given we're still not on the YouTube. So we apologize. No Sam Monson coming up on YouTube, but we'll have him on the phone. We got a phoner.
We got listeners who are just using the YouTube page as a live chat to communicate with each other while listening to the show.
I mean, if you're on there and you're listening, waiting, could you just send in the mail sack questions as well? That'd
be great. Fireman. And no, Ginger, Sean Payton will not turn Zach Wilson around.
Hey. Just
that will not happen. I'm going to go ahead and make a proclamation right now.
Ginger can piss people off. If that happens, oh my God, we might have to block him from the feed. It'd be too much for people.
We would. If Zach Wilson wins multiple Super Bowls with Sean Payton as his head coach in Denver. By the way, Broncos unis, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
I didn't see those.
They look like Virginia.
Come on,
they
man.
They look just like Virginia's unis.
They have one of the most iconic, perfect throwback uniforms in all of sports.
Yeah, go back to the white stallion.
You give me that stallion in that D. Oh, my God.
I mean, who doesn't like a stallion in a D? I was thinking that watching Edmonton last night. No, I'm trying to sneak in hockey here, and Swigart can't stop laughing. The Oilers went with like these weird dark. Remember their era of like dark bluish, kind of like a nobody even knew what they were. It's like, go back to the blue and the orange. That's such
exactly.
a good look.
Yes.
And now they did. Go back
to the Gretzky Messier days.
Oh, YouTube's up now, everybody.
Yeah, Joey's been in here.
Hey, way to go,
been
Joey!
Cranking on it.
Yay!
There we go.
Okay, I got
thanks
it.
To Joey.
I think you got it. If you were watching on YouTube, I think you have to open the new tab up. Hold on, let me see if I can find
it. So what should we do here? Should we do Monson on the YouTube? Or?
Hey, we're
let's
alive.
Just get him on the phone and call it good at this point.
All right. We got Sam Monson coming to the bottom of the hour. Michael Penix Jr. He penned an article to the NFL general managers.
He's really good, man. I'm glad I don't have to play that guy anymore because I kind of like him, but you can't really admit that, and now I'm kind of rooting for him.
You can't like players that are on rival teams?
You can't, no. Not while they're on the rival team. Once they leave, it's okay, yeah. But in the moment, can't do it.
But like saying congratulations for winning the Heisman.
Never!
Can't do that in the
Never.
Newspaper, can you?
No, that's a... I can't say the phrase, but...
He wrote a letter to the NFL general managers basically saying, I understand your concerns and your questions. I'll tell you why they're not concerns and questions. And he talks about growing up in Dade County in Florida and, you know, kind of a, not a rough for him per se, but like his neighborhood wasn't great and there's not a lot in Dade County. And so like people play football on cement and, you know, talks about his Indiana experience and how injuries did play a part, but also like new systems changing, evolving, him having to kind of prove himself to even be thought of in this position. I couldn't be rooting harder for somebody. I quite enjoyed watching his college career at Washington. He thrived in the DeBoer system. Him and Odunze's chemistry was off the charts. I don't know where he's going to end up, if it's mid-first, early first, late first, early second. I have no damn clue. Nobody does.
No.
But what did you think of the approach of, let me just address all the problems publicly and, you know, it's a letter to the GMs, but really it's just like, it's an article. It's a column that he wrote.
Yeah.
And everybody can kind of dive in to see his thoughts on being evaluated because he has to answer all these weird questions. He has to have all these dinners, has to hear about how he's projected to not be a good player, how he could be Phillip Rivers. It's just night and day with these guys and what they have to hear about themselves.
I feel like it's not it obviously wasn't directed at the GMs like he said it was, because he's met with all the GMs that matter. He's had these conversations with them. They know what he's been through. They know the history and they know how he feels about it. I felt like it was kind of two reasons he wrote it. One was to get something off of his chest and to basically, like, he hears this a lot in media interviews. He hears this a lot from people. Like, I just want to, like, let me tell you what I've been through and how I feel about it. And I also think it was a letter to whatever team ends up drafting him in terms of their fan base and how they should feel about the pick. One of the things that I feel like quarterbacks struggle with a lot when they get to the NFL, especially guys that are drafted early, or that they've never faced real adversity. Like, Caleb Williams got into a back and forth with Greg McElroy the other day. I don't know if you saw that. But McElroy said, that's my concern about Caleb Williams. He's never faced any adversity in his life. And Caleb said, well, that's not true. I didn't win the starting job as a freshman. Year two, we lost the Pac-12 title because I got hurt. I would argue it was because your defense was ass. And then year three, they went 7-5. So he's like, I have been through adversity, and I kind of lean more Caleb in that argument.
Who was he saying this to?
Greg McElroy had a take saying that the concern about Caleb is he's never struggled. He's never had any setbacks in his career. And Caleb was like, well, that's not 100% accurate. I didn't go undefeated for 3 years. I've lost games. We've had emotional games.
Like, did Greg McElroy know that they were 7-5 last year?
Right. It sounded like a pretty dumb thing to say. But on that note, I do agree with the overall take that I think a lot of quarterbacks struggle because they come from being the number one guy in high school. They're the number one guy in college. Their high school teams are undefeated. Their college teams are undefeated. They never lose. There's never any setbacks. They get to the NFL, and when you're drafted in the top five, guess what? That's not the reality. You're going to suck ass. Like, C.J. Stroud is an absolute outlier. Top five picks don't win at a high level right away. Trevor Lawrence in his rookie year. Go look at anybody who was drafted early. It's going to be rough for at least a year, maybe two, because usually your teams are terrible, and you got to battle through that and survive it. That's one, to me, this is it's the knock that people use on Penix. I almost feel like it's one of the biggest compliments that he's been through that, he's fought through that, and he turned into the player that he was at the end of his college career.
I we'll go to Monson here. I'll just add, that was perfectly said. The only thing I'd add to, what is the narrative of the things being thought about if Texas is his last game of the year, not the Michigan game? And I know you can't rewrite that, right? But like, it's just, sometimes it can be that fickle for people. Instead of like the 2-year sample size of tape, Bo's going through this, Knicks.
Yeah.
It's like, what was your last game of the... Michigan just destroyed you, huh? Yeah. I don't know. Lit Texas up pretty well, though. So he did.
On the struggle thing, by the way, I know we got to go. J.J. McCarthy was on this Michigan spring game and showing off his, like, 75 rings from high school and college. Talk about a guy who has never struggled and has always played on legit teams. That would be a major red flag.
McElroy bring him up? Or
no, he did not.
Oh,
actually.
He's a winner, yeah, though, right?
He's a winner. Winners win.
Sounds about white. All right, coming up next, Daily Ticker, Sam Monson, PFF.com. He did a 2.5 hour mock draft. We'll get his thoughts coming up next on the Daily Ticker. Mail sack at 8:15. Dirt and Sprague back with more on The Fan.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that?
I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, Daily Ticker time here on a Tuesday. We are 2 days away from the NFL draft, ladies and gentlemen. You know what's a really fun thing to do if you get bored and you're like, dude, I love the draft. I'm getting excited. Pro Football Focus has a mock draft simulator that you can play. I don't really feel like publicly acknowledging how many hours I've spent doing this, but it's a decent amount, and I win the draft every single time. I'm not an overzealous owner,
nope.
And I get A-pluses on all my picks, but you can go do that. And joining us now is somebody who knows a lot more about this than we do, Sam Monson, our good friend of Pro Football Focus, the Pro Football Focus NFL podcast. They did a 2.5 hour mock draft podcast. They are
great.
All over this thing, dude. They're dialed in at @PFF_Sam on Twitter. Sam, thanks as always for the time, man. We were just talking a bit ago about how dumb NFL teams are. And let me ask you this. I know we've talked about, you know, quarterbacks and kind of the way that they're feeling going in. Is it right for Washington and New England to take a quarterback at 2 and 3? Or if they called you and said, hey, Sam, do you think we should trade back and pick up more draft capital and maybe take a flyer on a guy late in the first round, second round? What would you be advising them to do at 2 and 3?
Yeah, I think it always depends what the offers on the table are. It also depends on your rankings of those quarterbacks. You know, we tend to sort of view this as a binary, do you have a shot at a quarterback, yes or no? But these teams are going to view these guys differently, particularly this year, where I think it's the general kind of view is Caleb Williams is number one, and then there's a big step down, and then there's a group of guys who you could rank in different orders depending on what it is you value or what scares you the most. Each one of those guys has got a flaw or a weakness or a sort of red flag of some description, and it's kind of a case of which one do you have the most risk tolerance for. So, you know, if you're in New England, for example, I think Washington are in a situation where they can probably – you know, find their way to like a guy that's there at number two. You know, they'll essentially have their pick of the rest of the quarterbacks. And I don't see a trade that's going to get offered to them where they're going to want to jump out. The Patriots, though, at 3, I think is probably a slightly different story where they might be down to the third guy on their board and the trade offer that comes their way could be huge. You know, either they could get a trade to drop down a few spots to the Giants at 6 and maybe they get QB4 and they still like that guy. But if they get a trade offer from Minnesota or Denver at 11 or 12, I mean, the sort of precedent, the price tag for that kind of trade is already sort of set a few years ago by San Francisco. We're talking about potentially 3 first-round picks or the equivalent of 3 first-round picks in value. At that point, it becomes, you know, quite difficult to turn that down for a guy that could be the third best quarterback on your board.
What's the percentage of teams, though, Sam, and thinking about some of this stuff, because listening to you and Steve Riff yesterday and going through the mock and giving thoughts on different players and evaluations and what other people are saying about players, I love that stuff. But then I'm also wondering in the back end, how many organizations, what's the percentage of organizations you say you fully trust in the draft?
I think teams have gotten better at the draft. I don't think there's teams anymore, really any of them, that are completely kind of kamikaze with what they do in the draft. I think generally speaking, everybody is operating within the margins now, and some teams are better at maximizing the various edges and sort of getting the best possible outcome. And some teams are not as good at that. But I don't think anybody is sort of reckless in the way that certainly teams used to be. And you don't need to go back very far to find cases of that happening. So, you know, I think there are teams that are definitely going to be more inclined to play the kind of quote-unquote correct percentages and odds in the draft than others. But I don't think that anybody really anymore is out there completely on an island just operating off their own script.
Hmm. Is there anybody, you know, we spend so much time, Sam, looking at the top of the draft board and who's going to go in the top 10 and how many quarterbacks go in the first round. And we kind of lose sight sometimes of teams that maybe get that one missing ingredient that they need, whether it be middle of the first round, late first round, second round. How many of those teams are kind of in that category for you that you look at and you think, God, you're just one or two pieces away, and I'm really curious to see what they do in the draft?
I think when you go down the draft, there's quite a few teams that certainly, maybe not one or two pieces away, but they have a clear need and otherwise a good team. And when you're sort of that good a team with a clear need, you might be inclined to do that, trading up and going aggressively after a player. Hmm. So a lot of the AFC powerhouses over the last few years, I think, all fit into that category, whether it's Kansas City, whose wide receiver room was an obvious problem last season. They might get aggressive and go after one. They also have a problem at tackle that they could really look to trade and get aggressive about fixing. Buffalo, same thing. When they traded away Stephon Diggs, that became arguably the worst wide receiver room in football, and they're picking 28. So they could get aggressive and go try and solve that. Or, you know, Cincinnati at 18, that's picking kind of higher than they usually pick because of the injury to Joe Burrow last season. They might use that as an opportunity to catapult themselves a little bit further up the draft and get a blue chip prospect that, you know, they don't usually get because they've been such a good team.
What do you think the Seahawks are going to do? They've been interesting the last like week or so. The story comes out, Mike McDonald, the new coach, comes in there and tears all this Pete Carroll related stuff down, says we're going to build our own thing here. And it's somewhat controversial to fans because some of those memories are pretty special. What do you think Seattle's going to do with their first pick?
Yeah, it's an interesting spot. You know, they could go in a number of different directions, I think, at that spot in the draft. I think they've got an obvious need on the interior of their offensive line, but they don't necessarily like to use those draft picks there institutionally. That doesn't mean they won't necessarily now with a new head coach on board and potentially a new direction. But they also could use defense. You know, they could go in a number of different directions. I think they're an interesting spot for a guy like Troy Faiatanu, the Washington tackle slash guard. There's no reason he can't play tackle at the next level, but equally, I think he could play guard. So that position flexibility might give them cover to take an interior offensive lineman at that position and not feel bad about the fact that you're, you know, taking a guy at that low position value, bad high. But equally, they could be in a prime position to get one of those edge rushers that starts to fall. I think there's a big three in this draft in Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, or Laiatu Latu. The third one of those guys could easily be available at 16 and be very good value, I think, at that spot.
Hmm. Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus is our guest. We've seen a lot of kind of marquee wide receivers be on the move. You know, most recently, obviously, Stephon Diggs that you just pointed to in the last handful of years, though. But looking at this upcoming week, there is a chance maybe you get Brandon Ayuk to get traded. A.J. Brown and Philly's liking and unfollowing and doing all sorts of weird stuff on his Instagram, so we're going that route now. I'm just curious what you make of those situations, the contracts maybe that could be being negotiated, or if a move on from those wide receivers for those respective teams, especially on draft night, is the right decision.
It's always down to the contracts, you know, where you are as a franchise in terms of cap space now, but also in the next couple of years, what it's going to look like, because there are teams out there that simply need to get rid of the contracts and can't afford to pay those guys. Now, I don't think that any of the teams that we're talking about with a potential receiver to move this year fall into that category. You know, I think the 49ers could pay Brandon Ayuk and still be fine. I think Cincinnati, if they wanted to, could pay T. Higgins and be fine. They don't want to. They look like they're going to play him on the franchise tag and move on. But, you know, we looked at this a couple of years ago with the A.J. Brown deal. There wasn't a better first-round pick spent that year than the pick that Philadelphia sent to bring over A.J. Brown. And that was even knowing that you were going to have to pay him the big contract extension that Tennessee didn't want to give him. So, you know, if you are one of those teams that we talked about in need of receiver help, if a first round pick would get you Brandon Ayuk, I think it's something that they should absolutely consider. I mean, Buffalo is extremely unlikely to get a player at 28 or even package a trade to move higher than that and get a player that's going to be better than Brandon Ayuk. Now, okay, he's going to be cheaper than Brandon Ayuk, but that's the trade-off, right? You are paying for the certainty that that guy is already an extremely good NFL wide receiver. And teams like Buffalo, Kansas City, you know, they need that certainty because they expect to be contending every year.
Herbert being a former Oregon quarterback certainly helps the interest locally, but I think Harbaugh going there now as the coach after having won the title at Michigan, I think adds even more intrigue. And I know they've been talked about a lot. You and Steve going back and forth on the McCarthy stuff. We know that's out there of him saying he's the best, you know, quarterback in this draft, and some speculation. Could they do the crazy thing and trade Herbert? I love that you guys highlight the dead cap money could be a thing, but as you also pointed out on that pod, you know, if he really likes him, maybe there's a value in stashing him. Ultimately, where do you think, is Harbaugh just going to do the smart thing, trade out, trade back, get an offensive lineman, address other positions, or do you think Harbaugh could be throwing us a curveball here?
Yeah, I don't really think the J.J. McCarthy thing is for real. I suspect, you know, he's just talking up a former player and a guy that he wants to see go as high as possible in the draft. And maybe he does have a kind of slightly irrational view of how good J.J. McCarthy is, but not to the point where he would blow up a situation with Justin Herbert already in situ with the Chargers. Yeah, maybe trading down is absolutely on the table, but I also think they're absolutely in a prime position to just get the best player at a position that they value the most, whether that's wide receiver or the offensive line. You know, at number five overall, they could easily have either the top player off the board in terms of offensive linemen, or probably the second wide receiver off the board once Arizona picks their guy. Equally, I mean, Harbaugh said this himself, you know, if QBs go 1, 2, 3, 4, they effectively have the number one pick in the draft at number five overall. So they get to select who the top player is on their board as a team that doesn't need a quarterback. So I think the Chargers are in a really good spot to have either a great player at a position of need or to take advantage of the quarterback needy teams and trade out and get a trade haul for moving down a few spots.
Last one for you, Sam. You know, we have a lot of recency bias. Sometimes it's easy to forget things that happened a couple of years ago, and I don't know if we're doing it in this case, so I want to throw it at you because you know way more about it than we do. We're both kind of the agreement of this is one of the more exciting drafts in recent memory just because of who's going to trade up, where do quarterbacks go, really outside of number one. It is an absolute crapshoot where everybody else ends up. Do you feel that way? Is this one of the more anticipated drafts that you can remember in recent years?
Yeah, I think so. We really don't have a great feel on what's going to happen after that pick number one. Caleb Williams looks locked in place, but after that, it's kind of a coin flip between Drake May and Jaden Daniels. It seems there's also a chance that J.J. McCarthy goes that high if the NFL really does love him more than the general public and draft analysts, the way it's been talked about all the way through the process. And then each one of those things, you know, presents a different set of dominoes the fall, and the whole draft goes in a different direction. And then there are a number of different kind of pivot point teams even beyond that. Arizona at 4, will they trade out? The Chargers we just talked about. The Giants are a complete wild card at 6. We don't have any idea what they're going to do. And then whether or not Atlanta, you know, chooses the first defender off the board at number 8 in the draft. I agree. I think this draft is kind of chaotic, and it's great because of that.
Yeah, we love the chaos. Sam Monson, go check out the Pro Football Focus NFL podcast, their extended mock draft mega pod that they did, and also go to pff.com/mock, and you can play your own mock draft. It's a lot of fun. You can kill a bunch of hours. We're all pumped for the draft at @PFF_Sam. Thanks for the time, as always, man, on draft week. Know you're busier than hell. Let's do this again soon, hopefully.
Anytime. Take it easy.
There you go. Sam Monson, a Pro Football Focus. Not recency bias, man. I can't wait for Thursday night.
Well, nobody knows. I mean, outside of one, nobody has a clue. Even Washington, no clue. It's like, well, it's Daniels. And now suddenly this May stuff starts to pop up. You bring up a team like Atlanta, who I believe is at 8. Well, you know, it's probably going to be Dallas Turner. Well, now it's Byron Murphy. And it's just, and then you go to the Vegas props of like what the odds makers are saying for some of these guys. It's just crazy and unpredictable. And seeing who trades back, who moves up, who takes quarterback, what quarterback surprisingly, you know, goes higher than you think.
Who slips a little bit.
I can't wait for it. I think it's going to be great. Plus, you have the fact that it's in Detroit. Oh, my God.
In Detroit, baby. Hey, it's about damn time. That's next on The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure? Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, or online at crunch.com. Mike Doc Parker coming up at the top of the hour. I love being on YouTube now because when somebody's late coming back from the bathroom, they are exposed to the viewing audience. Sprague's in there taking a dump. He's taking a nice, joyous walk through the hallways.
Yeah,
no mind us. It's on the radio here, working hard, grinding away. Hey, we're back on. Hey, buddy. Hey, how you doing? How was your bathroom break?
Doesn't realize
Celsius?
The branded report part of the commercial
nice
break.
Little stroll out there.
No, that was Joey's fault. Sure. We were arguing about if it's quicker to fly from here to Hawaii or if the flight from Hawaii back home is quicker. I went to Hawaii a couple years ago. Almost a six-hour flight there.
Yeah.
3.5 on the way back because of the jet stream difference.
Yes, it's always quicker on the way back.
He's maintaining the opposite.
Joey's a very smart man, way smarter than I am, in basically every category of life, not in this one.
I tend to agree with that. Swag, you've been to Hawaii.
Wrong. He's wrong.
Yes.
The flight back is quicker.
Yes.
Flight back is quicker. It just seems like it takes longer because you're leaving the island.
Your vacation is over.
That's a good... I should have thrown that in his face. Yeah.
It's the most depressing flight that you could take standing on the tarmac, especially when it's one of those like outdoor Hawaiian airports and it's still sunny and you're just kind of like...
Dude.
Basking in the sun.
The Honolulu airport is all outdoor, basically, and it's just like, oh my
Most of the Maui airport is, too.
I feel like I want to be an inmate who's going to, like, escape. Like, I'm just going to run away. I'm not leaving!
What'd I miss?
I did a wonderful segment, and we had great commentary from the audience, and now the segment's over. So, you know, way to go. No, you didn't miss anything. I just wanted to point out quickly, it came out late last week. We don't have a lot of time here. Just wanted to throw it in.
Yeah.
It's about damn time. We've known that this was kind of coming. Teams have been preparing for it. In college football, you are now going to get the 2-minute warning and helmet communication.
You like the 2-minute warning?
I mean, I'm not opposed to it.
I hate it.
You anti-2-minute warning guy?
Yeah. I'm anti-2 feet. And I'm anti-2-minute warning. The NFL should adopt the college model.
Well, now that
on.
They
one
keep
foot
the
in,
clock
no,
moving.
2 feet, 10 no. toes.
When you get one sick foot in on a dope catch, that's as good as... I don't need two. What do you need two for?
No, I like... You can bring the 2-minute warning in now that you're not stopping the clock on first down.
Yes. The clock now rules are the sense. NFL clock rules. That's why I'm okay with it.
I just don't care about the 2-minute warning.
Okay. Well, what about helmet communication?
I like that.
Okay, we like that.
Now, right. Who's getting this?
You can have one offensive player and one defensive player.
No. Like, how many schools are getting it versus not getting it?
I mean, I would hope they're all prepared.
Should be all of them at the D1 level.
Well, that's been the problem, is a lot of them have complained. You know how expensive this is?
I mean, no offense to FCS level football, but you're going to be okay. You don't need to communicate if you can't afford it. Major college football programs, the ones that we watch and care about.
So, like my Pac-2 school?
Your Pac-2 school should be able to put a microphone in a helmet.
Okay.
I think they should.
It'd be really funny if Trent Bray was like, wait, who's in right now? I can't tell. The voices sound the same.
They still have to do the hand signals. We have to hold up the bed sheets on the sideline. Like, what the hell took us so long? I know a lot of programs have been practicing with it all spring, assuming it was going to come into effect, and now it has officially come into effect.
You like the 2-minute. I'm a little surprised and disgusted by that.
I like to have, just to give me a breather, 2 minutes left. I like to know that the clock's running down. You get one more play in. Maybe it's a freebie timeout if your team is trailing. I'm all in on the 2-minute warning.
Swag, are you pro or anti 2-minute warning?
I like the 2-minute warning.
God, what is wrong with
you? Your team's
guys?
Down by 10. You're trying to make a late charge. They only have one timeout left. That 2-minute warning is vital.
Don't get down by 10.
You need that 2-minute warning.
Don't go down by 10. You know what I loved about the Nuggets Lakers, aside from the ending and the comeback? Neither Ham nor Malone called timeout. They just said, go. You guys are vets.
Yeah, let them play.
Let them play.
Don't set up your defense.
Imagine if we had 2-minute warning in the middle of all of that last night. Like, great, can't wait another 4 or 5 minutes for this to happen.
The final 2 minutes of an NBA game takes about an hour and a half.
Not last night. Not last night.
A lot of foul calls. We got a lot to get to in the final hour. Mail sack coming up at 8:15. So get your questions into the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. A couple of more NBA playoff notes, including previewing the games tonight. Let's start, though, with our friend Mike Parker, the voice of Oregon State. His thoughts on the spring showcase this weekend, Oregon State baseball playing in the Civil War this weekend, and everything else going on at OSU. Mike Parker kicks off the final hour next on 1080 The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.